characteristic of a great second-gen, next-generation leader? So someone that is third culture, and even too, to add upon that, what makes like someone that is third culture unique, and almost like what can we put into the table, right? What is that we can contribute that is actually really unique and special?
I think being third culture is kind of funny because, especially when I talk about this with my wife is, like, kind of exemplifies being a third culture kid to me because she was born in the Philippines and immediately her parents were doing separate doctorates in the UK and in Holland, so she spent a lot of formative years there, and she went back to the Philippines and ended up here. So when I talk to her and her siblings, the feeling that I get from them is a lot of times they didn't know where they belong. And I think that's something that a lot of next gen guys kind of grow up feeling, because it's like, we don't really fit here or there, you know? That's how I felt in high school, where it was like, I didn't really fit with all the Asian kids because I grew up in the urban parts of Jersey, and then we didn't listen to the same kind of music, but I didn't fit with all the guys who listened to punk and hardcore and rock and roll because I was a different skin color, you know? But what may have been the thing that made me feel alienated, what I think is actually the thing that also makes us good leaders, where on one hand you feel like you don't belong anywhere. On the other hand, we learn to be so adaptable that we can plug in almost anywhere. Where because we've walked in so many different kinds of circles, we end up serving as bridges to different kinds of communities. And I think that's one of those things that a lot of next gen guys get told, and on one hand I might argue that it puts an unfair amount of weight on them because you keep telling next gen guys that you're the future of this church, you know? But on the other hand, it's like you are more adaptable probably than the generation that came before us. So I think a trait of a good next gen leader is knowing that you are made like this because God intended it. And it's like, how do we cultivate and grow this giftedness that we may not have been embracing before?
Bro, I relate to that so much, man. Someone saying that out loud was powerful. I said the same thing, and Thomas said it earlier, but I think it's true. It's just that the word is authenticity, or being real. Because I can only be the culture and the context and everything that I know, right? And so, for instance, where I'm at in Gadsden, Alabama, this is the way it is. There's a white church and there's a black church. There's a Hispanic church, right? The only Asian people that live in Gadsden's are the ones running the Chinese restaurants. You know what I'm saying? So because I'm none of those things, I reach everyone. We're probably one of the most multicultural churches in our city because I'm neither of them. People feel comfortable. And so what I found is that just America in general, the Asian influence is just infiltrated in everything. There's probably not one home I can't think of that doesn't have a Samsung appliance. You know what I'm saying? That's my people, right? We did that jump. We were nobodies, and now we own it all, right? Hyundai was the one that came out with the 10-year car warranty, right? We came up with that. People, like American people, like, I don't know one person that doesn't like Chinese food or sushi or hibachi or whatever. We're so ingrained in just American culture that I feel like we actually, if we just are true to ourselves, like AJ was saying, we just be like who God has made us. Like in this context, I grew up with a dad who's from literally just the sticks in Montana. And my mother's from Korea, you know, and immigrated over after they got married. And just being true to that, because I relate the same thing, is like, we transcend culture. And so we can reach a broader context of people. Like if you just don't, you know, for me, like our huge heart for our area is just unchurched people, like unchurched, de-churched people. And when you just focus on that aspect, that transcends all skin color, all cultural backgrounds, because you're focused on the one thing, it's the lost heart. And so I feel like our reachability is greater for where we're at in our context, and it's been different. It's been good for us. And then it's always funny, like, I mean, this is so dumb, but I say it every year. Like, I always tell people when you're here for Easter, say, you know, all your family is at Easter this year, but the one thing you get to say is you went to the church with the only Asian pastor in like three counties. So, and I think
Good preaching.
So I think for me that's the biggest thing.
Pastor Thomas, what about you, brother? What do you see as one character? So one great
he knows me better. So he was like one. He limited me to just one.
Just one. 1.5.
I think you guys probably already talked about the whole idea of cultural adaptability. Mm-hmm. Would you say that would be a good term to summarize what you guys are talking about?
It would be, actually.
Spot on.
So cultural adaptability, that's not my one answer. I just wanted to know, they already took it. I think my response is going to be cultural literacy. Right? So if there's this cultural adaptability, I would say cultural literacy, really understanding the cultural context of the people that you're speaking to, right? Whether that's a diverse setting or even a more homogeneous setting. But you know, we already talked about all the different kinds of diversity that exist in our challenges in the times that we're pastoring and planting in. You've really got to be literate about the worldview issues that people have.
That's true. Pastor Sammy.
Yeah, I think it's a humility. When it comes to humility, I used to think that being quiet and just not standing up and just be humble, that's like an Asian humility. But when I was looking at the humility, the scriptural definition of humility is actually, it means that it starts with God's instruction and finishing with God's direction. So it's a whole different level, a whole new level of humility. Humility doesn't mean that we just being quiet and just being stuck in the Asian minority limitation, but actually it's having more confidence in the Lord and go beyond our limitation and just speak what we need to say and do what we need to do. That is, according to God's word, that is the humility, what it really means. So I really do think that second generations, if they grasp the idea of a real humility, biblical humility, I think there'll be a great kingdom work. Yeah,
that's good. Now, we talked about leadership developments. What have you seen or what you're doing within your church? Because the fact is, I wanted to preface this, even as we were talking about discovering leaders from within, developing and deploying, I'm not pretending like we're all experts here. Maybe we aren't. There's some here that are experts, but maybe some of us really haven't been thinking about that. Like, that just has not been in our radar. And I think we're all in the same boat. Like, we just want to see multiplication take place, and we need to start from scratch, right? So let's do it all together. Hey, it's not about who's better, who's, you know, whatever position, but what is it that we're seeing right now is a common leadership development pathway that has been leading to discovering, developing, and deploying? Is that taking place within your church that you could share, or maybe you've noticed it from another church? How have you been seeing that? We could start with you, Pastor Sammy, again.
So I normally use Hebrew chapter 11, 24, 25, that's about Moses by faith. He found out that he is not considering himself as a son of Pharaoh, but he chose to suffer with the people of God. And with that passage, I took out three elements: identity, faith, and the community. So I help second generations to figure out their faith first. Like, who is God? And what is the Bible? What is the church? Do my second generation leaders really truly understand the gospel? That's the starting point. Are they really saved? Do they really know Christ? And then, out of the understanding of who God is, they can know who they are, the identity part. I think the identity part is a huge, as a second gen or third gen, being in America and being a minority, but identity founded in gospel, that is really, really the turning point for the second generations to go. And then the last part is finding out which community God has called them to be. So I developed the leadership, interactive leadership, cohort group that goes through one by one, starting from faith and identity and community. So I invited some second-gen leaders, and we just went through all the exercises and just to figure out those things. So I think it was very helpful to go through those pathways for them to grow as a leader.
Pastor Daniel?
I was going to say, I want to hear Thomas, man. I want to hear what he has to say.
Well, I'm going
to
set him up.
It's the best for last. Save it. Get the bad response.
That's
that,
way.
That guy will say anything.
I think for me, what I've seen, and I think we said it in our group, you know, is leadership is influence, right? And what I've kind of felt like for myself, was it, I think Zig Ziglar says, you can do whatever you want in life if you help enough people do whatever they want to in life. Mm-hmm. And so for myself, because I am a self-sacrificial in the sense, like, I want the best for people, right? So, like, when I tell you something, whether it's you don't want to hear it or not, it's like, it's what I want for you, not what I want from you. And so as I've just been developing people, like, whether it's the group of men or, like, I have a guy on staff, young student pastor, constantly, like meeting and helping and shaping him in his ministry, because I didn't have that, you know, as a new student pastor, just helping him with the things that he's going through. I think it is constantly morphing and changing depending on what it is. And as I've seen now in like the life of our church, like this person who was a sporadic attender, the regular attenders, now you see them serving, and that some of them are deacons now. You know, we're seeing someone raising up like our elders. I find that it's not just this cookie cutter, each thing works for this situation. Like for my staff guy, it's going to look different. For my lay people in the church that I'm trying to move into something, I start a little bit differently. And so, you know, for myself, you know, being 35 and I'm still learning, it's something that it keeps changing, it's morphing. So, I mean, I don't know, it sounds bad, like we talk about, you know, in regards to being an expert, I think it's different per the context of what I'm trying to accomplish in that person. Because for one person, it might just be, we're going to raise this person up, he's going to be a deacon, he's going to be serving and oversighting and serving these people in this context here. This guy is going to be raising, and there's a lot of, like, I have a guy, he's just over our volunteers right now. But his personality and what you see God already given naturally, this dude's going to do something great in our church. And so I'm taking a more personal investment in him because I don't think he realizes that potential that God has tapped into him and placed just natural gifts that if he used that and just really gave it to God could just exponentially be impactful. So I hope that was helpful. That makes sense.
That's good.
That's AJ.
Yeah, reiterating a lot of the same things. Having people come alongside as I began to do work was key. And I feel like that's one of the things that continues to work, where even as we develop younger guys and younger pastors that I'm mentoring, there's a lot of, you know, watch me as I do, and then come alongside me, then I'll watch you as you do. So there's a lot of pouring in, there's a lot of vulnerability, there's a lot of openness on both ends where I could share about how things aren't perfect with me, but here's everything that God's been doing and working in my life. And for the times that I've been too weak to stand on my own, he carried me, and know that he carries you. And that's a lot of our conversations. But at a certain point, what was instrumental in my development, and I said it when I started talking here today, and I'll say it again, was having a pastor or other pastors who encouraged me to shoot my shot. And the difference was getting this genuine seat at a table changed everything for me. As opposed to being in this ministry context where I had, you know, pastors who were constantly reminding me, okay, here's what you should do. And it kind of felt like they were trying to make cookie cutter versions of themselves out of me. Having people come alongside me, and what we're trying to do is we're trying to see how God has gifted you so that we can nurture those specific things, because I'm not trying to make another version of myself. We're trying to make people to reflect Jesus, not AJ. And the difference between people saying, hey, stay in your lane, to eventually saying, hey, we're going to trust you, have a seat at the table so that we can keep nurturing you, but still equip you to be somebody we're partnering with, changed my life. And I think that's one of the things that we aim for with the guys we develop as well. It goes through that process of, you know, watch me as I do, I'll watch you as you do, and eventually I'm going to trust you as somebody to partner with. And yeah, that's what I have to say about that.
Thank you, Pastor Andrew. Pastor Thomas, so what would a common leadership development pathway look like?
Hey, so I'm going to give you guys a kind of the microscopic response and then the macroscopic response, okay? So the microscopic response is this. Is this where I get to plug the pipeline?
Yeah, do it, brother.
Okay,
yeah.
So we talk about this a lot.
Oh, you do have a sheet right in front of you.
Oh, yes.
Of course, we're all
sitting over this.
Make sure you take that and you log in and really get a good idea of what...
It's a shameless plug.
Like, make sure you know what that tool is. That's a pretty priceless tool that you know, Send Network has really developed. And specifically, it was designed for church planters. But I'll tell you, microscopically, at the local church level, for my individual leaders, I take them through this. Now, I've got guys that are not, men and women, that are not necessarily ready to be church planters, but I'm going to take them through this pipeline, basically as character and leadership development process. If you guys are not familiar with that, let me just give you kind of the components, right? These are the areas that it addresses: spiritual formation, Bible fluency, spiritual design, evangelism, relationship, understanding church, servant leadership, self-awareness, communication, understanding context, spiritual readiness, making disciples, multiplying leaders, church planting, making a difference. I mean, honestly, don't you want every member of your church to basically have core competencies in these areas?
Yeah.
I mean, I look at it and I go, I don't care if you're going to plant a church or not. Even if you're not going to be a church planter, man, what kind of an amazing gift would you be to another church or to another planter if you came with some of these competencies already under your belt? And so I take all my leaders through this kind of a process here. The design is already there. The material is already there. They do it online. We get together. We talk about their progress. I can see what they're putting in, and that kind of becomes the mechanism, right? All it is a tool, but it's a tool that I can interface with them, and I can see what they're doing, and then we just have follow-up conversations. So that's kind of at the micro level. But my response in terms of like really developing the next generation of leaders, I think the bigger issue is I want to cultivate a kingdom perspective in the life of my people. I want them to think kingdom. I don't want them to think local church. And what it comes down to is this. I think the fundamental challenge that we all have as leaders, as pastors, and church planters is that we tend to look at the resources that we possess from the perspective of an owner rather than from the perspective of a steward. Mm-hmm. We look at our resources as ownership rather than as stewardship. Mm-hmm. And so therefore, we're always concerned about survival. You find churches that are declining and they're just circling the wagons. They're always concerned about when somebody leaves their church because that's a loss of resource. And we struggle with that, right? We're always trying to survive. We're always trying to grow. We're trying to get bigger and better. And so I think there is this innate tendency that we all have to look at the ministries and the people and the resources that God has given to our entrusted to us from the perspective of an owner. And so we always feel like if somebody leaves, they're betraying us. They're going to like go and serve at another church. They're going to tithe at another church. They're going to do something else. But if you have a kingdom perspective, that doesn't matter. And I think the greatest thing that our next generation of young people growing up, I think what they are longing to see are leaders that really have church capital C, you know, in the heart and in the mind and the vision of their leaders, not only a commitment to their local church. They want to see, like, is church capital C big enough and compelling enough for me to give my life to? Or is it just the pastor and the leadership really only just thinking about church little C? And so one of the ways that we try to do this as a network, right, our vision is to plant 10 churches in 10 years. And so we don't want to think about our resources from the perspective of an owner. We say, hey, what does it look like for us to be a good steward? We're going to share and borrow, right? Rather than think, you know, I buy my tools, I own my tools. No, let's share and borrow. Let's operate with the principle of share and borrow. And so what we do with our ministry folks is, hey, if Church B needs a worship leader, we're going to send you.
Yeah.
If Church C needs a children's ministry director and you've been serving and you've got core competencies here and you got a track record and you got a calling, we're going to send you. We don't own any of these resources. Yeah. These all belong to the kingdom and this belongs to the church. Yeah. And so you're not playing for one small little team. You're playing for the big team. And we want to cultivate that mentality in everybody that serves. Now, that's a frightening place to be. It's not an easy place to be. Even for our people, trying to cultivate and nurture this kind of a cultural mentality about the way that they see church, it's uncomfortable for them. And so we're always trying to tell them, like, don't think about your church as if it's your church and you have a tight grip on it. Think about where the kingdom of God needs to most be advanced. And you want to be in the game. And wherever it is that God's going to use you to most advance his kingdom, that's where we want you to be, and that's where you should want to be. Move outside of your comfort zone. Don't think about your security and your stability and your group of friends. Right? This is the place where I belong. No, no, no. Think capital C. And so we operate with the mentality that we should always share and borrow resources. If somebody's missing a worship leader, somebody's missing a youth group director, somebody's missing somebody for finances, like, we're always thinking, how can one person be sent and called and released from one congregation to another, or even to the next church plant? That's the mentality that we want to nurture. And I think for our young people, to be able to see leadership and churches that think that way, I think that'll give them a more compelling reason to be a part of the church at all. Did that sound crazy enough to you?
No, that was awesome. That's good.
Deliver, man.
Good.
I think one of the things is if we reevaluate what is already our metric success, I think the new one in the future, I think even today, is about how are we developing more leaders?
Yeah.
How are we spending time to develop more missional leaders? Not only those that would take part maybe as a lead church planter, but be even a team member, church planting team member. This pipeline is really to help to ensure to not only like develop just a church planting leader, you know, the church plant, the lead church planter, but it's also to have team members that could come alongside that church planter, and as a coordinated effort, plant in a given place that God's calling them to. And so if we can start seeing that within our churches and us working together, collaborating for that to take place, I think, man, that's where we want to see that greater kingdom impact. Because it's all about the gospel, and it's all about the kingdom of God. I want to introduce super quick to my brother right here, Brother Nate. If you could stand up super quick. He's shy, right? He's our Sin City missionary in Edmonton, yes. So you just came on board, it's been
a year ago.
A year ago, yeah. Yes.
I think Canada.
Yeah, so it's in Canada, not in the United States. Toronto's going to take the championship, so I don't know how it's going to work out. White House visit, I don't know.
This is the pastor up in Canada as well.
Oh, sweet.
Pastor John Leff.
Welcome, Canada. That's so happy you're here. So if you could just share a little bit of what is it that you do.
Yeah.
Just to let you know, with the Send Network, you're not only like tapping into like resources and like material, you're tapping into a support staff, really folks that will be able to help you to, if you are interested in planting in your city or seeing your church involved in being a supporting church for a church plant in Edmonton, that you have someone that you connect with to ask, you know, to ask questions and get involved.
Yeah, how many of you guys have ever been to Edmonton? Anyone? Canada?
Yes, Canada.
Some far away land. I'm in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, which is about 6 hours north of Montana. And we have, in the greater metropolitan area, about 2 million people. So it's no small city by any means. It's the largest, most northern city in the world, if you just look at the globe. And sorry, I'm clearing out the room for you. I've been talking about Canada, everyone's leaving. Like, oh, we're gonna bring in Canada. But about 4 years ago, my wife and I came under the conviction that we wanted to plant bivocationally, so we both took on full-time work, and we were just going hard at it. And about a year ago, our city asked if I would come alongside as a Sin City missionary. So I don't know if y'all are familiar with those terms, but the SCM basically helps to develop the culture. So everything you guys are talking about, kingdom, multiplication, brotherhood, all those things are a part of the bigger conversation in the Edmonton area. So we're recruiting pastors, working with them, developing them, deploying them. Edmonton is perhaps one of the most multicultural cities you'll find in Canada. And so we have, you know, representation for, we don't have any Hmong people though, that's the interesting thing. No. Yeah, they don't. Yeah, I don't know. They get scared right there at the border. They're like, no, go back. The snow scares them away. But
water. Oh,
man. Water. But yeah, in our city alone, we have close to 60,000 Filipinos. You know, so it's growing. We're one of the fastest ethnic groups, fastest growing ethnic groups in Canada right now. And it's just when you talk about like what is that ratio, 1 to 300?
Yeah.
You know, churches. Yeah. In Edmonton, it's 1 to 60,000. Yeah. You know, churches. And so when we're looking at this conversation, really interesting because I met Chris about a year ago, and he was telling me all about this. And this is something that, you know, I've been dreaming about. Like, you know, in Canada, you know, we're far and few between in terms of leadership, right? And not just leaders in general, but I'm talking about specifically Asian American or Canadian, Asian Canadian leaders. And I love this conversation, and I'm just soaking it all in. And so I just really wanted to, I actually ducked out because I went to the Filipino one, and then I found John. I'm like, let's go back to this one. Then we'll go back to that one for the food, and then we'll go back to this
one. We're joining for
that. We're all good.
Oh, which, by the way, I'm so sorry. I ordered food here, and they got mixed up. They were waiting for a confirmation from me, and I... But help yourself to water. You want some water? There's a little...
Help yourself to potassium. One of the things I'd love to see develop, like if I mean, in our church planting context, we're looking for planters, but we're also looking for, you know, just partnering churches, guys who would just come up and just spend a summer. And like I work with a lot of Filipino churches there, and they're just looking for people to come alongside them to help them. A lot of them are bivocational. I think 55% of pastors in Alabama are bivocational, right? That's what I heard. I think 80-90% in the Edmonton area are bivocational. So yeah, thanks guys for inviting us. Get to know John. This guy's killing it out in Lloydminster. Comes from a small city just like you, but they're killing it out there too. So
sweet.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Awesome.
Yeah, thanks.
Well, actually that tells us really well to our next portion. This is really for us to conclude, just for next steps. We don't want to pretend that we know exactly what we want to do with this next check.